football, fighting, and full of nonsense. The Stephen Howson Podcast. Made in Manchester.
Long requested, long anticipated, second time of asking. It took us that pissing long to do it. We did do one in London about, it was just after the end of the season, actually, I think. And it corrupted, it only recorded every other half second. So instead of being like 45 minutes long, it was 26 and a half minutes long. And it just had, it was like a phone cutting out all the way through it. It did get uploaded. I don't think anybody listened to it because it was fucked. But anyway, it's Adam McCullough. How you doing, son?
Wagwan. What's going on, everyone? Everyone good? How are we doing? Glad to be here at last.
So we kicked off as a bit of an end of season review, didn't we? And that wouldn't feel right to do now, I don't think.
So much has changed. So much has changed.
It's been a busy month.
When's this going up?
In about an hour.
Okay, so there'll be a video on full-time Devils that I've seen tomorrow, which has 50 odd days in Manchester United, and it's crazy how much has changed.
That's probably when we recorded the video. When we did the podcast, actually.
Just been up and down, but it's mainly been up now, so looking forward to it. It's got an excitement feeling, but I'm kind of, a bit weary as well. But if this goes to plan, it will be beautiful and it will be amazing, and we will boil a lot of piss on the way.
Well, that is our favourite thing to do. It's going to be a hell of a season, regardless of what happens, I think. I was thinking of doing a video, somewhat along the lines of things that you could expect to happen this season. But I couldn't write it, right? I couldn't figure out what to write in it, because I was like, well, one of the things that I was thinking would happen would be that one of the top managers would get sacked. And then I was like, I don't know who. I don't know who, and I don't think I could just leave it as open-ended as like, oh, one of the managers will get sacked. Like, really? Insightful, you dickhead. But one of them is going to lose the job. There's too many top managers and not enough success in this league to go around. There's not enough progress. There's not enough success for all of these top managers to go around.
I think we can discount three straight away, though. I think Pep will not be sacked in his first season. I think Jose will not be sacked in his first season. And I think Jurgen Klopp will not be sacked. I'm sorry, not Jurgen Klopp. We've got four, Jurgen Klopp and Arsene Wenger, because Arsene Wenger is the one I would say he's in danger. But when you look at the facts and you look at what's gone before it, can you really say that? Because Arsenal don't... You had... Was it Gazidis who came out and said, I'm not here to win things? And you have all these things going on, and it's just like, are Arsenal going to sack him? I don't think so. I think he's the master of his own destiny.
I tend to agree on that as well. I don't think he is the sort of guy that's going to lose his job. And I look at it and I think, in the cutthroat world of the Premier League, he is the guy that probably would lose his job, but not at the club he's at. And I think they obviously take into account a lot of the stuff that he's done. I think he's safer than Wenger.
Could you imagine the cheek of Leicester if Ranieri had them like 12th, 13th or below at Christmas and they sacked him?
I'd go and join the riot. I'd be on the streets of Leicester with a bag of walkers going, fucking Sanabird!
It'd be typical of his career, though, because the way things went at Chelsea, he seemed to be getting things going for them, if I remember correctly, and then he got sacked. Fair enough for Jose, but like, it's a difficult one. But I genuinely can't see any of them really in danger. Pochettino, he's not going to get sacked. There's a long-term plan going down at Spurs.
If you go all the way through, Conte won't lose his job. You go all the way through the league and you're like, who's going to be the... If I was like a bookies now and I'm thinking, right, who do I want to make a nice juicy odds on so people enticed into it, and who do I actually think is going to be the guy that gets sacked first? You know what? We shouldn't be asking these questions while we have the internet at our fingertips. Let's have a look.
What about Ronald Koeman? No chance.
Evan. No,
they've got him in now, right?
Yeah, but he's the first appointment, so he's not going to sack him.
No one knows what.
Well, no, true. He could easily be a guy that's like, no, give him 16 days and fire him off. I mean, yeah, then that's the unknown quantity, isn't it? So
maybe looking at the side of the table, to be fair.
Sack race, Premier League, 2017. Let's have a look. Who do you reckon's the favourite? There must have been one that maybe narrowly missed out on relegation last season that's still in the shit, but I can't think of anybody.
Alan Pardew?
I don't know.
Remember, they were doing really well, and they all just tipped. And in a game, towards the season.
Alan is his favourite. Oh, no, that's it. That's thing with my dad.
Did you see the video all around? Where he is old one, but he's like, all the key type stuff, just bollocks.
Why am I not surprised? There is a Mike Bassett of Football Manager.
I love Big Sam. I would hate him as to be, obviously, I'm not suggesting I would love him at Manchester United for anyone. Absolutely. I still blame him for one Steve Nash. But yeah, Sam Allardyce, just a proper.
I'm just trying to read it. You know what I read earlier? That when was Mourinho appointed?
July the 1st, officially.
But he appointed like a month before that.
But I think his contract. Well, then again, they say he had. I've just been to managers. And the first thing that caught my eye, and the first name that caught my eye, 6-1 Sorello. Now, why the fuck is Sorello even in the running?
For Arsenal manager. Because someone probably wanted to put a bet on it. Stop him with it, innit?
Jeremy Clark, 401. Yeah, Morgan, 401. Nosaurus is more likely to be Arsenal manager than Piers Morgan.
No way.
Nosaurus is more likely to be Arsenal manager than it was Esther Tilly.
That's the last year, isn't it?
Alright,
cock
up on the
sack,
Asus. We're going to have to go out on our own on this one. So, they were keeping Sam Allardyce for a good season, didn't they? And who's going to go like?
Which club will Ryan Giggs manage next? Salford City to one. There's no way he's going down to Salford. No way.
Why would he do that?
Barcelona and Real Madrid are 100 to 1. 6 to 1 for Liverpool, 50 to 1 for City, which is ridiculous. Nottingham Forest, 40 to 1.
What do you make of Thierry Henry leaving Arsenal today?
Well, I only saw a tweet from BBC which said he was asked to choose between punditry and...
No, because obviously there's... Wenger's got history with letting Vieira go as well. And they all move on to travel and we'll get them talking to him. It's an interesting one that's going down at Arsenal. Like, with that power with Wenger has at that club is crazy.
I can see why they're all putting their power as well at United.
But Fergie was successful, and with Sir Alex Ferguson, like, there's a lot of Manchester United fans that even now think he's a bastard. A lot of match going fans dislike Sir Alex Ferguson, but they would never have called for his head because he was successful. I remember that time around. I remember being at a game against Blackburn. Was it 05? Or 06.
2005.
We lost
2-1.
There was
2-1. A lot of people calling for his head. And
yeah, we lost 2-1. Mort Gamps Pedersen grabbed 2, I think it was. And I remember being in... It was when I had a membership, so I was all over the gaff, and I was in just by the dugouts and stuff, and people were booing him. And I remember I got into an argument with a guy, like... Because I was probably... I was just like, nah, you can't sack Fergie, you're stupid, like... And we just got into an argument. And I imagine that's what it's like at Arsenal every single season.
Oh, can you imagine? Well, if you've watched more than 35 seconds of Arsenal fan TV, you're going to know exactly what the Arsenal fan base is like. I mean, to be fair, the United fan base isn't getting off this scot-free. The United fan base couldn't tell you what colour kit we fucking play in. If you said it was red, someone would say it was dark red. Someone would say it was deep red. Some of them would say it was blood red. There'd be an argument over what colour fucking shirt we wear because there's that many fans that there is no consensus. And I always say this about people. People have accused me of claiming that I speak for the fans because we spoke to the BBC when Fingy was appointed. I just happened to be at Old Trafford that day and they asked to talk to me. I've never said I'm a fucking spokesman for the fans, nor would I ever claim to be, because there's just too many fucking facets to this support. I don't represent the kids that walk around in Stone Island thinking they're 10 men. I don't represent the guys that wear the hoodies with the shirt over the top of it. I don't wear the people who do face painting and jester hats. None of these fucking people represent me, and I don't represent any of them. The United fan base has got so many fucking facets to it. You know, I represent... You know, just look at the fucking range of people that we have on Full Time Devils. You know, Andy's as different to Ray, to me, to you, to Charlie, to Gaz, to Jaden. There's so many different fucking people. I mean, Hayley, you know, she's Irish and lives in the northeast somewhere, and she's a United fan. So fucking what? Do you know what I mean? There's just difference to so many people, and so much fucking difference in the United support. How can I claim to speak for Ray? How can I claim to speak for Haley. So I imagine when you get all of those different people in the melting pot, people have got different angles. People have got different opinions on stuff, and people come at things looking from a completely different angle. You're never going to get consensus on fans. I think you'd get the consensus at the end of Fergie's reign that that's perhaps the greatest manager you're ever going to see, and probably not going to see the like again. But I do remember the times when people had had enough of him. When Mourinho came and Chelsea looked like they was never going to lose a game.
Yeah, there was that fear in it. We had to give them the guard of honour at Old Trafford. We lost that day.
Even if you just think...
Glazing.
The Glazer time was awful. That was when the infighting really started. Because then you had... And this isn't me throwing a jab out at anybody, but this is just an observation that I made. It seemed like a lot of the Irish fans seemed to really hate anybody that decided they wanted to be a part of FC United. And there was people that created those stickers, Love United, Hate Glazer. And then there was people that created the stickers, Love United, Hate FC United. And it was fucking chaos. There was arguments in the ground. There was fighting in the ground in East Lower where I was. There was people fighting each other over it. You'd heard it kick off over FC United and things like that. And it was fucking chaos. And I think the Glazers are probably one of the worst things to happen to the club because of what that caused. And there were so many top Reds, and I mean top fucking old school Reds, that went because of the thing that happened with FC and just haven't been back since. And it's fucking sad because you can't lose that level of fan from the club and expect it all to go on the same. I see people saying there's no difference in certain fans. Well, do you know what? Truth be told, there fucking is. Some of the people that go home and away, you got to give your fucking respect to. People that have been going home and away since the fucking 70s. How can you say if it's your first match that you're the same level of fan? You might feel like you are, but you're not at the end of the day. There is a difference.
I think, obviously, like life, everyone has different opinions, you know what I mean? And I think with football, obviously, people take them to heart a lot more because your football team is something... Well, I think in England more so anyway. Well, actually, no, that's wrong. Your football team, for 99% of people, you grow with for a large majority or all of your life. So it's important that people that people don't want or don't see, they just could never get. So you take things to heart more than with your footballing opinions. And one thing I've learned over the years, like back in, now, I'm against the Glazers. Some will call me a hypocrite because I still go to games and all that.
That's fair enough. Because a fucking pie, a shirt, or anything like that, then
I am a hypocrite because I still put money in the Glazers' pockets. But I remember this quote from Gary Neville's book, where he said that he doesn't support the players, who's in the dugout, who's in the board of directors. He doesn't support any of that. He supports the Manchester United, and that's it. And that's why I will always go back, regardless of what's going on. I will always go back. In terms of different opinions, like, over the years, I've learned to accept people's opinions now because people support a team in a different way. Like, back in the day, I thought people that went to FC maybe a little... I couldn't turn my back on United like that. That's how I seen it. But then when you think about it, like, it's different situations. People have different opinions, and it's how it makes you feel ultimately. And you just got to respect that.
And there's no right or wrong way to support the club as well. People remember that. Like, there is no right or wrong way to support the club.
These guys love the club as much as us, and they had to turn their back on it. And that's a sad thing as well. Like, even my dad stopped going as much because of that. And, like, it's sad. Like, I can't go to football with my dad as much because he's just always like, nah, fuck it. Like, it's too expensive or the money, this, that, and the other. And it's like, that's sad that part of the game has changed that. But you'll always get different opinions. And I think football as a whole is beautiful in the way that it also unites people. A day and age when everyone's fucking arguing and moaning over this and that and the other. But you see some of the scenes out, even at the Euros, or like, football mainly is positive, I think. It's just a negative that gets so magnified. And I think, obviously, you see that a lot nowadays as well online, with all the... all this shit, negativity just brings more hits, don't it? So, what goes down?
I was talking to Jaden about fandom and stuff like that over the weekend, because obviously UFC 200 was on, big event, and we're talking about how certain you are. I didn't hear what you said then.
I said, watch UFC.
You fucking div. So I said, we was talking about like why certain fighters have a bigger support and why some don't, and you know, maybe what's right and wrong with that. And I said, like, I was taken to United by my dad, who was taken by his dad, and Jaden's obviously my lad. I took him when he was 14 months old. There can never be, with MMA or even with boxing, no one's ever going to have, like, if your dad watched Muhammad Ali, he can't take you to watch Muhammad Ali, because that guy's career is over in 10 years maximum, isn't it? So, like, you'd never get handed down your support of any other athlete apart from clubs. Now, there's no clubs in athletics. There kind of is, but there isn't, let's face it. You've got rugby teams. Yeah, that it can happen in rugby as well. And I guess if you're an American fan, you've got your baseball, your football, your basketball teams, and you can hand down your support for that. But it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because I think a lot of sports, the majority of sports, Olympic sports, boxing, fighting, all that sort of stuff, you're just a fan primarily of the sport, and then you might attach yourself to one guy that you really like, the personality of or the way that they play that sport. But with football teams, it's irrelevant who is on the pitch and who is in the manager's chair. You're there for the badge and you're there for the club. This is what you do. You go to this particular place with this particular colour seats, and you don't like the guys over town that have got different colour seats and have always gone to that one. And I always find it mad and fascinating. And I understand it. I understand why it exists, but I still find it fucking
massively
intriguing.
Football is more than a sport, man. It's more than a sport. And if people have been watching my channel, cheeky plug, subscribe.
Boom.
I've gone to a few different things recently, like Wimbledon, Silverstone. Obviously, I'm a fan of boxing, so I've always supported a boxer over time, like Nassim Hamed, Floyd Mayweather, Eric Morales, these kind of guys. Oh, don't get me started. He only had three of the greatest fights of all time with Barrera. People with that, when we all together are supporting him, it is like football. But like you say, it lasts for a certain time.
That's
because
you've got a personal relationship
with
the guy. That's
when
totally
his career
different.
Goes. No, but I still think you get people that follow Amir Khan around like that. And like you say, once his career's over, it's finished. At F1, it was very weird. Like, people just support Lewis Hamilton. Wimbledon, you go. People are there more for, like you say, for the sport. When I went to watch the tennis, people were in there, probably didn't know too much about the guys that were playing. They were just fascinated by the sport. And I think football is so tribalistic. Some people go to football. I remember some some guy on the internet got ripped for saying, who are these guys that go football just to get pissed and all that? And it was like, I was thinking, are you stupid? That's
most
like,
of them?
Like, most, like, everybody, like, he clearly hasn't been to a game.
It's a social thing, isn't it? It's as much as a social thing, and what's the word I'm looking for? It's a...
it's a religion, man.
It's a thing you do with your mates. That's social, isn't it?
I mean, get pissed, but it's a religion, and I think it's much more than a sport. Some people that go couldn't, probably don't know the rules inside out, or, you know, don't pay attention to the tactical sides of it. That's why you get
a lot. I guarantee there's tons of people who go, get twisted, get chiseled off their head. Don't give a flying fuck who we'd sign in this transfer window, because they're not interested in that. They're not interested in how we perform generally. I've been to some... I go and watch a fair chunk, obviously, in and around United of non-league football. And I think that people are literally there because that's what they do. They just go... Rather than just going and sitting in a pub with six mates, they just go to fucking Hyde, or they go to Drolsden, or they go to Glossop, or they go to one of them teams who are fucking turd, who've got no hope whatsoever of making the Football League, let alone the Champions League. But they're not asked because this is just what they enjoy doing. And I don't think they sit around, make videos about, are we going to sign a new striker this year? I don't think they care. I think they literally just go because they see the same old faces and they get fucking twisted with them. And occasionally, they might get a day out at Wembley or something like that. And I think that's fucking brilliant. And who's to say that they're right and we're wrong, or we're wrong and they're right? There's nobody, is
there? Yeah, it was like when I was at the F1, I was scared to get into a conversation with a proper F1 nut in case I looked like stupid. But at football, you can hold a conversation with anybody. You know what I mean? Like, well, anybody. Well. But and I think what we're trying to say here is it's pretty aimless, isn't it, at the moment? But what I think what we're trying to say is football's just great. Football is amazing.
It's not aimless whatsoever. It's discussing what's going on. It's a fucking major facet of our lives. And I was going to say, in the middle of all that lot, how many times do you see people just coming and experiencing a United that aren't a fan? And I was thinking, you probably don't see it a lot. And then that kind of leads me sort of onto what I'm going to be doing. Hopefully, it's not been finalised yet, but hopefully going to be doing this Club 92 thing, and we're going to try and do it in a really fast time as well. I'm not going to give you the specifics, but we're going to try and do it well under a season. And I'm literally going to be a tourist at those, aren't I? I'm going to be going to Oxford, and I'm going to be going to Middlesbrough and Newcastle when they're not playing United, which is going to be a different experience for me. I'm not going to have any dog in the fight whatsoever. It's just going to be strange turning up at these random grounds in the middle of nowhere.
Do you watch football, like, you know, when football's on the telly, not like Euro 2016, I mean, like, you're switching through the channels and Fleetwood Town versus Accrington's on. Do you watch it?
Yeah.
But yeah. Do you find yourself, like, fully immersed in it?
Not to the same level. I'll be browsing Twitter and stuff like that, but I'll watch it. I like watching it from a tactical perspective. I like to see if there's any kids that I think look mint in there. It's the same reason why I occasionally go and watch a non-league game. It's the same reason why I go and watch, like, I watch the under-16s and stuff at United. That's different. I'm more interested in that from a selfish point of view, that I want, you know, another fucking wonder kid to be coming through, and I want to know about him before anyone else does. But I think when I'm watching, you know, I went to, Drawsden got quite far in the FA Cup a couple of years ago, and they ended up playing Chesterfield, and Chesterfield had a couple of lads that I knew in the team, which was mad as fuck, because they're both from Drawsden. I thought that was bizarre. We went to Drawsden like on a fucking Wednesday night. I think they ended up going out on penalties or some shit like that. I can't remember now. But no, I will go and watch football. I like football. Something that I wanted to do with my channel, which might get shelved because of the Club 92 thing, is I wanted to go and give a history of football in Manchester, and I was going to go to 10, because there's about fucking 20 professional clubs, but not down to League 2 and that, but I'm talking below that. I'm talking Conference and lower tiers, 7, 8, 9 and 10. There's like 25 different clubs in Greater Manchester, which is nuts. There's more football clubs per capita in Manchester than anywhere else in the world. Buenos Aires and London actually has more football teams as cities, but there's more people in them cities. So per capita, Manchester has more football clubs per person than anywhere else in the world. And I wanted to cover that because I think that's fucking awesome. And I also think there's arguably too many fucking teams for them all to be successful, because there just isn't enough fans to go around. When you've got United and City on your doorstep, how are Stockport going to do well? How are Drawsden going to progress? How are this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy going to do well? You know, there's just too many fucking teams. And then teams are all competing for players. Them teams are all competing for grants and resources at the lower levels as well. And like the East Manchester Junior Football League, which Jaden plays in, is a phenomenally well-run football league. Like, all of the matches are played on grass. There's as many scouts as there is parents at every single fucking match, because this is the hotbed of football in this country, and it's Manchester. And it's fucking brilliant to be a fan of football in Manchester at this moment. And I think with what's going on at the two biggest clubs in the city, United and United Reserves, obviously, but obviously, you know, what's going on over the road with the Blue Camp, they're doing big things. And like we've said a few times, whether or not it's the right decision to get Pep Guardiola in, you know, on the back of what has he ever proved he can do with a team like this, in their heads, I can understand the reasoning that they think this guy's the best coach in the world. I think with what we've done, and I think with the transfers that we're trying to make happen, we're trying to show we're a big fucking deal. We're not going to be considered the capital of football like somewhere like Milan could argue. Until we're both competing for the Champions League year in, year out. And we're not there yet. We're not far off, the both of us. There was obviously semi-finalists last season. We're fucked since Fergie's gone. But you know, prior to that, we was quarter-finalists and semi-finalists every single year. We'll get back there under Jose, even. Slip a tongue. So I think it's going to get there. At the moment, no city has more football watched than anywhere else. Than Manchester, and that's because of what they get and what we get in terms of attendance. If you look at the other big attendances around the world, you've got Barcelona and Espanyol in Barcelona, aren't you? Most of that's Barca. doesn't add up on as an aggregate to more than what Manchester gets between United and City. Madrid and Atletico doesn't add up as an average to more than United and City does. Milan, Inter are pretty fucked at the moment. They don't add up to as much. So, in terms of attendance, Manchester's the number one place for football in the world. We need to be more successful in Europe, and as much as it kills me, City need to be. Oh, do you know what? They can just be hovering around semi-finalists. That'll fucking do for me. But the players that they're bringing, the manager that they've got, the players that we're trying to sign, the manager that we've now got, it's fucking great time to be a football fan in Manchester. And I'm probably going to miss a lot of it early part of the season while I try and do this fucking record. But I'm really excited to see the difference of going on a regular basis to Oldham and Hartlepool and, you know, places like that. Burton.
Places with two men and a dog. The reason I asked that question about like football was because now I would have obviously, I think my love for football started with Manchester United, and I don't think if I had been taken to a game and at like 4 or 5 years old, I would have loved football as much. And it's crazy, like I'm not like that, where if there's a game on and the game's shit, I won't watch it. I don't watch every game of football. I watch big games of football that I know the quality is going to be high in, but I don't watch every game of football.
Just go back and, to what you just said.
I love Manchester United more than I love the game of football.
I think I'd agree with you on that.
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I would never have been so immersed in football if it wasn't for Manchester United. And I think because of my love for Manchester United, from there I've grown to love football and learn more about it and be intrigued by things. But I think that just being there is a big thing for me. But yeah, football for me started with Manchester United, and I'm not the same where I could go and watch every game of football. Like,
I like going and getting the different having experiences, and I think that's the only difference.
Experience is like, I want to go to an Ajax game to be in there with their fans when they're singing their Bob Marley songs and all that. I want to do that. I want to go to a Dortmund game, be in the Yellow Wall. I want to experience these things because they're amazing things to experience and part of football. But when I'm saying, like, I can't, that's, you know what I mean?
Well, you just nailed what you're just saying there with, you want to experience those different things. I want to experience all those as well. But I also want to go and experience the lower level in England. I think England's got a fucking brilliant structure of football in this country, and I want to experience the whole.
Talking about the structure of football, an important thing for me growing up, I think this time in football, like in recent years, we've been talking about a Rooney rule. Yeah, now this is going way off tangent for all. I think the Rooney rule is a bit of bollocks, to be fair, and I think the Batman's. Because obviously, in recent times in England and Europe, in the 80s, you started to see more black players coming through. So it's obviously a natural progression will mean those players become managers, coaches, etc. Mm-hmm. So then we'll have more of those guys represented. But one thing that I think in England needs to be worked on, and that's both a cultural thing and from a footballing, coaching, grassroots kind of level. There's so many British Asians in this country that are overlooked, yeah. I've played football week in, week out, at a decent level and lower levels as well. And there's talent there. And I think coaches and scouts, I'm not saying they're racist here. I don't think that's the case at all. But I think there's maybe a perspective that they're not as serious at football, or they're not as good as, or whatever. And they don't get as many opportunities. And I really think English football could tap into that British Asian market, and I think they're starting to now. Like my mate's at Liverpool, Jan, and he's British Asian. He's going to come through, be amazing, I hope. Although I hope it's not in a Liverpool shirt, and he'll kill me for saying that. But he is an amazing talent, and he used to train with us as a kid, rip people apart. I'm sure he's ripped me apart once or twice as well, and he's an amazing talent. But I think we need a breakthrough British Asian like that to come through. I remember when Leeds tried it, because they had the Lee Bowyer case going on with Ranjit Singh, was it?
Did a couple of Asian players break through?
No, but they only did it because they had the bad PR around them about Bollier kicking the shit out of some kid because he was Asian or something. And then you had Michael Chopra at Newcastle, never really had a chance. He wasn't really good enough. And then I think you need a breakthrough player, and then people will start standing up and taking recognition at it, because there's a lot of talent around. And I think when people say England don't have footballing ability and don't have footballing talent, it's absolutely bollocks. And I mean that from every kind of level. I've seen youngsters that can play football. I've played in teams that can play football at every level. Like, there's players out there that can play football. And I think the thing wrong with English football at the moment is the people at the top are not the right people in place. When you're looking at the FA and you're looking at what kind of person and manager that Roy Hodgson was, you knew it was never going to work. And I think a lot needs to be done. I think we need to tap into... We've got some great players that have come through our leagues. I'm talking even the likes of Rio, Gary Neville, Gerard Lampard, whatever. These guys need to be utilised. England, we had this conversation with, was it Greg? Remember when he said in England... On a chat, Skype chat. And he said, in England, people have to be players, managers or pundits.
Yeah.
There's never one in between.
Yeah, we did, because we spoke about how Van der Sar's gone and been marketing director at Ajax and stuff. I'll go a step further in what you're saying there. Is that
people can play
I've seen some ridiculously talented footballers, and one of the best footballers I've seen, one of the best child footballers I've seen, was a little Asian kid, and that was at City. Jaden spent 6 months at City, and while he was there, he had he was too small. He was six, and it was an under-8s team that he was going for. His birthday's in July as well, so he's almost 2 years younger than some of the players. So he was too small. Technical wise, he's pretty good. Apart from that, his left foot's shite. But there was this kid there that was like a little David Silva. He was controlling every single ball. He was putting a little bit of backspin on it, so he would kill it dead. Balls would be pinged at him, and he'd just kill it dead right in front of him. And he was magic. And I went and spoke to him, to his dad, and I said, he's got some skill, hasn't he? He goes, yeah, he rejected him at first. And I was like, are you kidding me? And he goes, nah. And he was from Knutsford, which, for those listening who don't know, is a bit of a posh part of Manchester. Mm. A lot of footballers live in Knutsford, and a lot of executives.
I know it for the services.
Like so it is a posh part of Finger. And he goes, I said, they rejected him, really. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, to be fair, he was right. He goes, he was a little bit soft. He goes, his skill level's not changed. Joe, his ability on the ball has not changed. He's constantly got his head up. He's constantly looking for passes and stuff like that. He goes, he was just a bit soft. Whenever someone went in a bit hard on him, he would go down, he would cry, he would shrink. And I was like, all right, so what did you do? He goes, started taking up a plat lane, which is Fallowfield, Moss Side sort of area. And he played in a five-a-side team there. He goes, hardened him up. He goes, and now City have just offered him a two-year deal. And I was like, that kid is fucking quality. Unbelievable kid. Asian kid. Now, there's also a ton of other Asian kids that I've seen as well, because a couple of my friends run the British Asian Football Foundation. So I've checked that out a lot as well. And I agree massively with what they're doing. They obviously work quite closely with the Kick It Out campaign, because it is bullshit. It is
Kick
like,
It Out campaign.
One of the things that they say is...
you're breaking up, yo.
I'll start Hello? Again. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Right, I'll start again then. But yeah, basically what they were saying is that one of the things that they come up against is that people think that players of Pakistani descent are too skinny and this, that and the other, and they're like, where the fuck are you getting that from? Have you not seen Amir Khan?
Yeah.
That's fucking shredded. It's just a matter of training and diet. That's all it fucking is.
I think also, I don't think it's purely that. I think coaches and stuff have to stand up and take a little bit more notice.
I think and coaching's
also,
the problem, mate. I really do.
I also think parents as well. I think a lot of Asian parents are keen for their children to... further education, doctors, lawyers, this, that, and the other. I don't think many take football as a serious kind of profession. I think it has started to change, but I think until that changes, you'll never get a... You need parents backing as much, do you know what I mean? You need your parents.
Yeah. If you're not being taken at 5, 6, 7 years of age to go and play football, you're not going to be of the same level just playing in the street with your mates. It's And if you just, I mean, I've got a mate who didn't start playing football till 10. He's ended up playing a match at Wembley. He's, you know, played in the lower tiers, professional tiers, but no, he's never hit league football. He's played at Wembley though in the Vars. He didn't start playing football till he was 10. I've got other mates that never hit that sort of height, despite being at clubs and playing from the ages of 5 and 6. But I do think in the modern game, I mean, Jaden's like better than any kid I ever saw in my life when I was 8, 9, and 10 years old. He would have been best by miles, but the level has just progressed so fast and so quick that he's just an average player really now. Maybe slightly above.
I think even now, like, you know, the likes of Gary Neville and Cole.
Yeah, I
don't think they'd have made it through at this.
I've said this a lot, right? And I got wrecked for saying it because I said something like, the Class of 92 lads.
They've got talent, clear.
The Class of 92 lads wouldn't have come through in this team. The players in our academy now are technically better than they were, right? And people are like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, no, I'm not saying that they're going to have better careers. I'm not saying that they're going to go and do better things for their country. I'm just saying that I think the level of footballer has increased. I think if you go on and put Adnan Januzaj in the 1960s, he's going to be the best player in the world, maybe. You know, he's going to be up there at least. Anyway, that I've told you, I think. MUTV played the 1968 European Cup final. I think I've told you this, haven't I?
I don't know.
And I've never seen it in full. I've seen all the highlights, and you know, I could tell you exactly what happens with all of the goals. You know, from the Charlton header, the best one where he goes around the keeper. All I could tell you everything that happens in that. And, you know, even the Eusebio shot that Stepney saves, and Eusebio comes and congratulates him like 3 times. Pretty embarrassing, actually. But I'd never watched the full 90 minutes of it. So MUTV, I think it was on the anniversary, so it's like 2 months ago, played the whole match. And I phoned my dad about 50 minutes through and went, George Best was shit, mate. He was like, what? I said, I'm watching 90 minutes here. George Best is fucking shit. And he goes, what are you talking about? And I was like, I'm just watching 90 minutes here, right? He's just passed it out for a throw-in with no pressure on him whatsoever. Just like, what are you fucking doing? he lost the ball 4 or 5 times. And do you remember when Giggs just used to put his hands on his hips and like I'm not fucking chasing it. Doing that, and I'm like, I'm going mad at the telly here watching George Best. Obviously, he's not shit before everyone starts going fucking nuts on that. But that's what I was thinking. I was like, the level here, obviously the highlights that you see of George Best, phenomenal. And he would have done fantastic in any era. But the pace of the game, I reckon they didn't run 10 mile. In those days, in midfield, or the other fullbacks in them days.
I fucking couldn't.
So much of the game, well, the pitches were full for one, but so much of the game was done at walking pace. Like, it's a different game of football.
I get what you're saying. The levels are different. Culture levels are different. Everything's different. Footballers are full-time. They've got scientists. They've got nutritionists. They've got this. They've got that.
It's such a different game, bro. I was blown away. So if you get a chance, go and watch the full 90 minutes.
I always think, you know, Bobby Charlton, Sir Bobby Charlton and all these, like, he was obviously, of his era, one of the greatest, potentially the greatest to ever play for Man United. And, like, footballers changed so much now that when footballers like him retired back then, it's to work.
Yeah.
And you've got people, like, that aren't worth to polish his boots. That when they retire or when they get ditched by a top club at 23, 24, they're made for life. And it just shows you how much football has changed. Football has evolved so much.
The money involved is ridiculous.
It's like, that not only means the players are paid more, they've got so much more around them that they are allowed to fulfil their potential. Like the same
the
way
pressure
say,
is also on them a lot more now as well.
But the same way we say, though, like, can you imagine if George Best had the coaching that these players have now?
Yeah, the mental support and everything. Like, he might have been talking to counsellors and all sorts of stuff. He might have got over his demons.
It's like with Paul Gascoigne, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel so... Obviously, he's an ill man. It's not nice to see what's going on around him. And I'm not using this as a point scoring, ha-ha, we're better than you kind of thing. Before anyone says that, it's sad to see how he is because he's one of England's most natural talents ever. But when Sir Alex Ferguson took over Manchester United, he sensed the change in football. He sensed the change in everything. The world of football was changing. We needed to be more like the Italians and the Spanish. We needed to have coaches. We needed to have nutritionists. Mm. Everything was changing. And Paul Gascoigne stayed in London, went to Tottenham, who were probably still, at that point, 5 to 10 years behind Manchester United, still had that drinking culture, all this bollocks around them. And I just think, I know Sir Alex Ferguson said it as well, he wishes he had him, but had he made that move here, the coaching would have been different, the team around him, everything. Things may not have gone how they were, but just one of those things, isn't it? Different players, like, if they get the coaching, they can make it.
It also might have gone exactly the same way, because he might have got best friends with him, because the drinking culture didn't get smashed that early, if you listen to him. Like, Keno talks about how him and Eric, you know, Daddy wasn't there till 92 and 93. So Keno says about how him and Eric used to go on daytime drinking sessions with Robbo.
When did Gazza join Tottenham? Was it 89?
He was there for the 91 World '91 FA Cup. So,
oh yeah, I'm thinking too early then. So what I just said is bollocks. But I still think.
I know what you mean. There's certain protections that Sir Alex Ferguson afforded some players, because not all. Because, you know, arguably, did we know about Keith Gillespie's at the time? Don't know. Don't know if that only appeared once he left Manchester United, or if that was relevant at United, but we protected him. You don't know. You only know that we protected Giggs, but we didn't really protect Beckham. So was, when we protected Giggs, was that Fergie had a word with him and Giggs went, yeah, all right, and just killed it, so we didn't really need to protect him? And when he had a word with Beckham, like, look, you're on the front of the paper, not the back of the paper.
No, but I think Beckham wanted that, though.
He did, but, and he was protected, and he couldn't cope with it. I think it's evident, and you look at his career, it didn't affect him. I don't think he went out drinking. I don't think he did anything that would have affected his career like that. But there was a circus around Beckham, which can't be denied.
I'll tell you a player that I wish was at United when Fergie was. Peter Beardsley.
Well, didn't he sign for like a day and then...
No, he left. I think it was a run action who told him. It was before Fergie, though, but...
But he was at the club for like... I'm sure it was like a day.
He was at the club for like a season or something. Or...
No, I'm sure it was a day. Just going to have a Google while we're on here. Yo, he was quality at Liverpool.
At Newcastle, I think. I remember Andy Cole said to us that this was after his... Remember when we interviewed him? Well, Jaden was there. You went there.
Dig. Yeah, he played 0 games for us.
I know he played 0 games, but he was at the club. So was he not in the youth team, right?
No. It was like his fourth club or something. No, he was a pro. He'd been a pro for 4 years before this. He played over 100 games for Carlisle before this.
Andy Cole, anyway. He played with Cantona, he played with Giggs, he played with Scholes. He said Beardsley's the best he's ever played with.
Oh, he played one game. Played in a League Cup against Bournemouth. And then went, what the fuck? He signed...
Who sold him? Ron Atkinson.
It was Atco, yeah, Ron Atkinson. I can't work out what the fuck happened here.
Basically, did it happen?
Yeah, one game, madness.
Because his dad wanted him to be a doctor. Fucking hell. And I'll tell you one player that I wish signed for Man United. Actually, this is a good thing. I just did a video as well. You know this futsal thing that's come out today with Giggsy?
Yeah.
What would your final say of players that you've seen? Not any ex-players that you've seen. So, any ex-players of your era. I'll tell you my five that I did on my video. It was Schmeichel, Rio, Ronaldinho, Scholes, and R9.
R9's a definite up front. Scholes is a definite behind him because of... I went to Mick Clegg's lab in Ashton, right? It's called the lab. It's a strength and conditioning facility. And he's got like a little square area. And I can't remember what it was all about, peripheral vision and shit like that anyway. And he's like, basically, no one can touch Scholes on this. And then he's also got this thing with a 3D TV you have to put the glasses on. And you have to track like 16 balls. They go up, down, left, right, backwards and forwards. So they move in 3 dimensions. And you stand in front of them. And then you have to say, like, where... You have to give them left to right what order that they're supposed to be in. So if they start off at 1 to 8, then they go to, like, 3, 2, 1, 8, 9, whatever. And he's like, Scholes was perfect on it. He goes, he literally is the benchmark for it.
What, a bleep test, basically?
No, it's not a bleep test. Like, you stand there in front of a 3D TV, and you put the 3D goggles on, and there's, like, a box on the TV. And there's 8 balls in this box, right? and then the balls start bouncing around in the box, and because it's 3D, they go backwards, forwards, left, right, and up and down. So they move in three dimensions, and they change places. And you're supposed to be able to track all eight balls at once, and then when the video stops, you're supposed to give him the order that the balls are now in. And I got one out of fucking eight, I think. And he's like, yeah, Paul Scholes would be perfect on this. And you're like, that's why he has such good vision on the ball. And you're like, that's fucking crazy. And he said Ji-Sung Park was the only one that came close to him with this. Because Mick was United strength and conditioning coach for 10 years. I think he left in 2009. Really interesting bloke as well, actually. Really fucking top bloke to listen to. Knows his shit. And he's got his lab's fucking quality anyway. But yeah, he said Scholes' vision, unparalleled. So I think in futsal, when it was tight, and from what I've heard of the likes of Rio and Giggsy, when they play two touch and stuff like that, Scholes is the man. So in a futsal game, obviously R9, you've got to have a Brazilian in there. Scholes is in there. I think Rio might be too big, you know, for a defender in futsal.
Nah, he's a footballer, man.
Yeah, he is on the ball, but I think you got to deal with a bit more agility. I'm trying to think of a more agile defender. And I'm thinking it's probably a fullback, I think.
Roberto Carlos.
I don't think he was that agile. He was a beast going forward. I'm going to say Maldini. Maldini. And then I need another midfielder, I think, don't I?
So what you got so far? R9, Scholes,
R9, Scholes, Maldini.
Who's your goalie?
I think Schmeichel's too big as well. I think you need a quicker goalkeeper.
Schmeichel's too big. He just fucking starred the goal.
Yeah, that's it, mate. It's too fast, this game, for him.
But it's a
he can't come out and clatter no fucker either. So I
it's
think
not
he,
an 11-a-side goal.
You've got to think of what made Schmeichel great, and it was his fucking aerial ability. It was his, you know, stopping crosses as well as his shot stopping and stuff. I think you need an out-and-out shot stop keeper here, so that's what I'm thinking of.
I'm telling you, that man start in front on his knees, arms out in front of a 5-a-side goal.
Oh yeah, pretty much fills it. But yeah, futsal goals are square, aren't they? Remember, they're quite tall. They're more square than rectangle. They're not like 5-a-side nets where they're long and low.
All right, I thought it was that in goals.
No, they're like a square. Or more.
Well,
of
I fucked
a
up my whole video, haven't I?
Yeah, boy. I'm trying to think of an agile goalkeeper here.
De Gea. He's not expert.
It's too obvious.
GG Buffon. I'm
trying to think of like George Campos or someone. Just someone like a proper crank.
Casillas in his time was fantastic at that.
He was.
I remember one game we played against him, and it was like every shot hit him. It wasn't like he had made save, but then when you watched it back, like he was like, oh man. There were times when Casillas used to make about 6 saves at once. Like the ball, and he'd just be all over the place, and you're thinking, what are you on? He was badly treated by Real Madrid as well.
Yeah, the way that ended, that was kind of ridiculous, that.
I hope that's why De Gea never went. Apart from the fax machine.
Well, it was clearly the fax machine. I'm stuck on who to go for here, you know.
It's because you're trying to be a hipster.
I am, that's what I do, mate. I'm going to say Barthez because he was good with his feet. Bosh.
I fucking love Barthez.
Not saying he was a cracking keeper, but in a futsal team, I'm going to want a guy that can come out with a ball a little bit and be a sweeper keeper, and I'm not a fan of Neuer. So you know, I need another midfielder, and
yeah, go on. We got Barthez, we got
Maldini, Scholes, R9.
You're missing one player that should be in every futsal team ever.
Zidane.
Nope.
Oh, Ronaldinho. Yeah, I know, but you've got him, so I don't want to go with him. I don't want to just go with... I know you've got R9, but I don't want to go with the entire same team. Obviously, he's famous for his futsal. I'm going to get Falcao in there. Not him. The original. The proper Falcao.
Do you realise the Falcao that...
Yeah, he's played
in this futsal stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So Falcao, there you go. Bosh. So I'm having Falcao, Scholes, Maldini, Barthez and R9. I'll fuck your team, son.
Rumour has it, me and Steve would still have Falcao at Manchester United.
Confirmed. I'll find a spot for him. Might be on the bench, but I'll find a spot for him.
This
some
is why
players that'll always just find a spot for
him. You know what? I don't get people that are saying Zlatan's going to do the same, because he's... I understand Zlatan could flop, I don't think that's the reason Falcao flopped. Like, Zlatan is in tip-top condition. Zlatan's body is probably still like it was when he was a 30-year-old or 28-year-old.
Yeah, well, and Falcao also might be in his 40s.
Maybe.
But do you know he's made his debut at 13? Is that not a bit suspect for anyone? Is maybe that not a little bit suspect? No, do you not just think that maybe they like lied about his age?
I don't think these people... I used to work at a Citizens Advice Bureau, yeah, when I was doing my law degree. And I don't think these people lie about their age. We had like so many people from different places coming into us, like from different countries trying to get help with their applications for visas, blah, 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 blah. And everyone that came to us, their passports would be like, their date of birth would be like 1st of the 1st, 80. And their wife's date of birth would be 1st of the 1st, 80.
And you're like, really?
And then like their kids would be 1st of February. And you think, this is because obviously in their countries they haven't got like birth certificate systems or the shit's been blown to shreds as it is, so birth certificates have gone to pot and they're just blagging everything, so it's easy to see how that can happen. Because you can imagine some kids come, like we can say this now, some guys must have travelled to England, got out of their country, their kids are here now as a like 3-4 year old. They probably haven't got a real birth certificate.
Yeah, it could happen.
And then in 10, 15 years'
shit,
time...
Shit, I don't even know where mine is.
In 10, 15 years' time, these lot could be playing for England.
Yeah.
So then we could have players that people are saying, nah, I'm sure he's like... I'm sure he's there.
This fucking kid, right? Shit, when was it? It was about a year and a half ago, right? Jaden was playing for his team. And there was this kid on the other team. And the other manager of Jaden's team's not the tallest guy in the world. It's probably about 5'7", something like that. This is when he was under nines, remember, right? So the under nines, this kid walks on and he's bigger than our manager, right? It's under nines. Jaden's like, what's my elbow or something, innit? This kid was huge, right? I took a picture of this kid stood next to one of the smaller, admittedly smaller players on our team who was up to his waist. Under nines. I was like, there's no fucking way. And we play this team and we usually have a good game with them. They beat us by a goal, we beat them by a goal, or it's a draw, and it's a really competitive match. They beat us 12-1, right? This kid scored all 12 goals. I heard Jaden obviously has got a connection at City, as I mentioned earlier, and I know one of the coaches that deals with the academy at City. So I went and spoke to him because Jaden plays futsal as well on a Monday night with this guy. So I went and spoke to him, and a couple of the coaches that he has there are City Academy coaches. So I went and spoke to him. I said, listen, I've either found you the new Ronaldo, or there's some cunt taking a piss. So I told him all the details of the team, who he played for and all the rest of it. And then about 6 weeks later, he was like, oh, we signed that kid. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah, he's fucking magic. I was like, yeah. And he goes, yeah, and then we found out he was 14. I was like, who does that? Like...
Did they still keep him?
No, they binned him. They binned him, but I'm like, it was so... It's like, if you're going to fuck about like that, you maybe played a year down, don't you, or something like that. Not five. Five, it's like me playing for him. He's probably better than me, in all honesty, as well. He was fucking mint. Tore us to pieces. And even at the time, I nearly didn't play the second half. I was nearly like, you're taking the fucking piss out of us here. All the players, like, it was literally like an adult playing against them. Fucking ridiculous.
I remember our school team was amazing in year six, and like we won the lot, and then their refusal was basically because they're off, and they played all these like, yeah, their school must have been part of a secondary school or something, and they played like all these year eight players, and they only beat us on penalties. But I remember being really pissed off, and like all of our team was chasing the referee around after the game. Must have got that from seeing Roy Keane do it. I was going to say
it
something.
Happens, it happens.
I've just seen something on Twitter. So West Ham fans are moaning. West Ham fans can buy that. Like, you know, we've got a season ticket. So if this was the last season at Old Trafford, we can give 50 quid and we can keep our seat. Oh, and they post it out.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. But West Ham have been posting seats out. And one chap's received a seat. It's got bird shit all over it. So he's tweeting like, somebody received their Berlin ground seat today and it was covered in bird shit. Poor from West Ham. And now a shitload of West Ham fans, excuse the pun, are getting onto West Ham. Just thought that was interesting. Nice bit of customer service from West Ham there.
How's it got bird shit on it inside the stadium? I saw the scenes at the end of that, though. I'm amazed that most people got them posted out. It looked like it was all fucking teching them at the end of the match.
They fucking wrecked
the place.
I can imagine if that had happened, they probably just grabbed one from somewhere else and stuck their seat number on it. Because there must be some seats that are just general tickets, innit?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
But,
I know when Main Road closed down, there's a guy I know that it was one of my mates, and my mate passed away at 19. He used to go to a match with his dad, and when Main Road closed down, he kicked fuck out of the seats to break them, to get them off, and fucking walked out with his and his son's seats, and they're in his room. He's still got them. And I guess, I mean, I've moved around Old Trafford. I haven't really got anywhere that's my seat, really. I've had the season ticket in the Stretford, and now this is the third year I would have had it, but it don't feel like my seat. I was in K-Stand since 1997, only up until a couple of years ago, and decided I wanted to sit with my dad again. You know, when you're a teenager in your early 20s, you're like, I don't want to sit with my fucking dad, but now I do.
You miss that. When you I think like...
Oh, there's stages, isn't there? There's stages where your dad takes you. There's stages where you want your independence. You're like, I don't want to fucking sit with my dad. I want to get drunk and be a balloon and that. And then there's the stage I'm at now where I'm like, I like you when it's me, my dad and Jade. And I think it's quality.
Yeah, it's... I went for, because my dad took me. So luckily I didn't have to pay, didn't have to do anything, didn't have to drive. So up until I was like 17... 16, 17, my dad was taking me, got a job, and then I used to go on the supporters coach myself. I like every game, and my dad would be like, what the fuck? And then we went again, and then I got my season ticket in the Stretty. But like, I miss my dad, man. Like, that's something that's, you know, like, if you didn't have football, what would you wouldn't probably see your dad as much or mingle with your dad as much.
Yeah, definitely.
That's why football is amazing as well. Like, just having that bond over football.
I think it's nice.
I don't see you. I wouldn't have known you if it wasn't football. I wouldn't have known a lot of my friends if it wasn't for football. So it is very good. Both playing, like, some of my friends that I see today, best man at his wedding, I know him from playing football with him. Like, it's crazy, man. Football's sick. But, let's hope it's as good for United this season. I've got a funny feeling it's going to be a mad one. And I'm not predicting anything, but... Ranieri, you better keep it glistening.
Should we do a quick one on the season coming up? How are you feeling on the Pogba situation? Do you think we're going to snag him, or do you think he's going to end up signing?
By the way, I got going like about five, yeah?
Sound. So... there's obviously only two ways this is going to go, I think, at the moment. Madrid have pulled out of the race. There's nobody else in for him. He's either going to sign a new deal at Juventus or he's going to come to United. What makes me think it can happen is the talk that Raiola's going to get 20 to 25 million if he does.
Mm.
That makes me think he'd be like, yeah, I was about this. Like, he catches me as the kind of guy that wouldn't mind 25 million. Like.
Mm.
Juventus are supposedly only offering him about 130 bag. And United can potentially triple that.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised to see him stay. I'm not counting him as our player right now, but I think it may happen because of the reason you just said. Raiola isn't going to let 25 million out of his hands, pretty much. I'm sure he's started spending that already. So
he's not had a bad summer already, to be fair.
Yeah, and I think there's very much chance it could happen, but I said this to my brother the other day. Can you imagine if we kept Paul Pogba when we did and he had four or five seasons like he has at Juve? This summer, there'd be talk about him going to Real Madrid anyway. So with us buying him at this time, we're kind of preventing him from leaving during his best years, I guess. That's the positive way I'm trying to look at things. But I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't happen because we've seen it before, but... what I like this time around is I get the feeling that Jose Mourinho is like, okay, you've got until, for example, 17th of July. If you haven't sorted it, we're going to go elsewhere.
Yeah, we're going
to. I think that's the best way to do these things. I think
the speed of the transfers that have happened, the way they've happened and the speed that they've happened tells me that we've not just rocked up on the 1st of July, which is what it felt like under Moyes and Louis. Like, it felt like they just walked into the office and was like, right, shall we get to work? Whereas it seems like Jose was out there scouting people. Obviously, he was at Dortmund games, photographed at Dortmund games. We don't know how many other matches he's been to and not been photographed. Or
Are you trying to say he knew he had the job in January, Steve?
Yeah, because I did.
Look, you know, yeah, that's. We did say that at the time, didn't we, when the rumours were floating about that. If it is true, then it's a good thing that he's got, that he doesn't come in.
Yeah, like I said, mate, the fucking word on the street from Christmas was that Jose Mourinho had been tapped up and had agreed to it. That was the word on the street from fucking January the 10th, something like that. And I think if you watch any of my videos from the time, I was saying shit along the lines of, well, I think Jose's probably going to come in the start of summer.
Quite obvious, didn't it? It did. It, and I think that was the best. I think it kind of worked out well for him. And I remember at the time when we were making videos and it was a bad result after bad result. We kind of knew Louis was leaving at the end of the season. So we never really wasted our time ever saying in a video.
No. Sack him because they're not sacking him. They was never going to sack him. And I don't know why.
Because we knew it was going to happen. But I think that was the best thing. I genuinely think that was the best thing, because if it was going to be Jose, you don't want him getting sacked by Chelsea and within a month jumping into a job.
You also don't know if there was a caveat on the compensation that he got from being sacked from Chelsea, that he wasn't able to take another job in the league unless he had to pay X crazy amount of millions, and either United or him didn't want to fucking pay that, because United to sack Louis van Gaal. I know people were like, well, you're just about to blow 100 million on Pogba. Well, that's the market value of a player. This is different. If you sack Louis van Gaal midway through a season, there might be more penalties than if you sack him at the end of a season. And if you've got to sack him at a higher fee, because obviously there's more of his time left to go in his contract, if you sack him halfway through his contract, that's going to cost you X amount of million. And then there might be the penalties to pay to Chelsea on top of that, the wages to pay to Chelsea on top of that for appointing one of their guys in the season that he's just been sacked from United, and you're not allowing him a pre-season and the chance of a transfer window to fix any of that shit. So you can understand. And the only argument that you can say that you could have sacked Van Gaal earlier was that maybe a longer run-up we might have got in the Champions League. We finished level on points with City, and our form actually in the second half of the season was pretty fucking good. There's only a couple of results that you look at and go, well, we might have improved that, but not many, in all honesty.
Mm. And I think it was obvious that, like you say, the club will probably, from experience with Moyes, the club were just waiting for top four to be impossible.
Yeah.
And that wasn't impossible until Bournemouth on the last day of the season. So it all made sense. And I think we're bearing the fruits of having waited for Jose Mourinho now, because, as he said, he's come in, he's evaluated what he needed. He thought he needed four players. He got them signed up. The three most difficult ones he got... Well, sorry, the three easiest ones he's got signed up.
Mm.
And the difficult one is giving it time.
What sort of message do you think it sends, that Man United in the Europa League, if we manage to pull Pogba off, sends?
Sends the same messages as what when we did with Di Maria, I think. I don't think United needs to send messages about... Let's be honest.
I think we do. Look at the amount of comments we got on our videos, people saying we're an ex-great club and shit like that. I mean, that's hilarious from a club that was never a great club.
On the football pitch, we have to prove it. But I mean, in terms of commercially and the money and things like that, that's never going to... Manchester United are in a position now where it's never going to change as much to affect us in terms of how much we can spend on a player just because we missed out on £50 million Champions League money. Do you know what I mean?
It's not the spending the money, I don't think, is the message that we're sending.
It's making an impact, on the pitch.
It's who we can bring in, I think.
It's because...
Who's available in the world?
Look at the players.
You're looking at the very top players, right? And the top players in the world are probably them three at Barcelona: Ronaldo, Bale, Lewandowski, Muller, right? That's probably it, isn't it? And then I think Pogba, Griezmann, probably in that ballpark as well. None of the first lot are probably for sale. Pogba is, potentially. Juventus are playing hardball over him, but he, out of all of them players that just listed, he's probably the only one that you can get. So going out and proving that you can still get him, and it isn't him going to Barcelona or Madrid yet, which is, you know, potentially still very fucking easily could do, I think it sends a fucking quality message. And I think that's the sort of message that United should have been sending the last 10 fucking years.
Mate, everyone that's saying 100 million's too much, Firstly,
Snowman, look at how much Bale firstly, went for, and he's done Bale more
went
than
Bale for £85 million, yeah?
And 6 years ago, was it?
That was
5 years
yeah,
ago.
So, and also...
No, it wasn't that long ago.
It's not in the Glazers' pockets, so happy days. Also, it's not going to bankrupt the club. We can afford this. Why do you think the club have been going out and getting all these commercial deals left, right and centre? It's so we can do this. And also, how fucking good does it feel to make Real Madrid go, whoa,
no, I can't afford that.
Whoa, Man United are offering that much. Fuck me. I'm going to take a seat back at this table because I don't want to get entered into that bidding. That is so beautiful. The club that have messed us around for all this amount of times and teased Ronaldo and took Beckham and, well, Beckham probably would have always left anyway. But
the only one that they took away from us was Ronaldo. The rest of them we sold on our terms.
They fucked us around with De Gea.
De Gea would have gone on their terms, obviously. But, I mean, I don't know if that was fucking genius or not from Woodward fucking about with a fax machine.
I don't know whether it's genius or his regular stupidity that done it.
But probably either way, I'm glad. And if we manage to pull Paul Pogba in, then I can guarantee we've got two world-class players and a couple of potential world-class players. And that's the sort of position that we need to be. But we need to follow that up with some success on the pitch, and then we need to follow it up next year with maybe addressing the other midfield role. And can we get someone like a Cruz out of Madrid? Can you imagine a midfield of? Let me just water your mouth with this one, right? Because I think Schneiderlin's going to have a good season under Mourinho this year. I think he'll be the linchpin of the team.
I'd
if you've
that.
Got a midfield with Schneiderlin at the base of the triangle, and then in the other two slots, if you had Cruz and Pogba, are you fucking kidding me? Name me a better midfield in the world than that. And then the forward three looks decent. You know, maybe you've got to look at bringing in someone to play up front. You've got Fosu Mensah that can come in. You've got a lot of fucking potential in and around the place. And
Fosu got a new agent today, didn't he?
I haven't seen that, actually.
Gareth Bale's agent. I hope he's not going to start fucking around.
He's a player that I see in Madrid one day, unfortunately.
He's a player, though, that I see. When Jose saw him in training for the first time, he thought, yes, that's my guy. Like, he's... I think Jose will see him and think, that's the youngster that both... A, if I use, it will appease these guys that want me to play academy players.
Exactly.
And B...
And he's no risk.
And B, he's exactly in the mould of the player that I like.
There is no risk, because he's mint.
Yeah, yeah, man, he just needs to fucking play Fosu. It's the year of Fosu.
You're going Saturday, aren't you, to Wigan?
Yes, and I can't wait.
Pete Bolton text me some fixtures for the rest of the season.
I've seen them, yeah, for the under-21s. They got Salford, haven't they?
Yeah, we got Salford. Where is it? 19th of July, Blackpool at the Aon Training Centre, but it's strictly behind closed doors. That sounds like a challenge. 22nd of July, we've got Altrincham at the J Davison. 22nd of July, Salford away. There'll probably be a few heads go to that, I reckon. You coming up for that one?
Probably not.
And then the 30th, we've got Port Vale at Vale Park. I'll probably go to both of those.
What was the date?
26th of July.
Salford.
Two weeks. 2 weeks a day.
On a Tuesday?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I'm obviously not going on Saturday. You and Gaz are going, aren't you?
And my brother now. Tickets? Oh, did you say Jadinho won that one, son?
For Saturday?
Yeah, there's tickets. You can phone up and book your ticket.
No, not for this Saturday, I don't think. He's going away with his mum, I reckon, I think.
Oh, I thought you... Yeah, because...
No, Charity Shield I need a spare for. Oh,
you can... Members can apply, so I assume if season tickets phone up, they can buy.
No, I need one for him for the Charity Shield. That's already booked a train. Fucking well done.
Members can apply for Community Shield, so I'm guessing if you phone them up and you got a season ticket, you can buy.
Alright.
We're just having a random conversation at the end of your podcast.
Hey, mate, don't worry about it. I'll speak to you offline about that. I'll ring up using the other ticket number that we've got, you know the one.
What was I going to fucking say?
Oh, yeah, so I'm not there Saturday because I'm going to watch Bellator in London with Ben. So we're having a fucking boys' night out in London on Saturday night because of that, which will be good fun. Got a 5-star hotel for £168. I'm fucking happy with that. Hey, it's better than that one we stayed in last time I was in London, lads.
Oh, fuck me.
And you know what?
You have to use a bit to hold the window open.
It's £11 cheaper than the one we stayed in. Yeah, I had to put a bin in the window to open the window. What the fuck was that all about?
Single bed.
That might be the worst hotel I've stayed in ever.
You even obviously,
stag do's, even
you obviously
stag
weren't there with us when we went to Mitch Island last year, and we stayed in a prison.
least it was secure. Right, anyway, that'll fucking do. Go give Adam a follow on Twitter. I'm sure you're
already. You know, I forgot to say we're going to win the league.
That's a bit giddy. I honestly don't know. I don't know. I think Chelsea will challenge. I think we'll challenge. I think City will challenge. I think, I don't know.
You know what's
Arsenal,
good?
Arsenal won't fucking do nothing.
We're going to boil so much Arsenal piss.
I can't wait.
Oh.
Anyway, thank you to Mr. McCullough for joining me.
Thank you for having me, guys. If you want to hear more, subscribe to Full Time Devils. Subscribe to Adam McCullough TV. Subscribe to Stephen Howson. And
go fuck yourself. See you in a bit.